And so it was.
How'd you find the bodies, son? Randolph asked, rocking back in the swivel chair behind the desk. He had removed all of Perkins' personal items and put them in a file cabinet on the other side of the room. Now that Brenda was dead, he supposed he could dump them in the trash. Personal effects were no good when there was no next of kin.
Well, Junior said, I was coming back from patrol out on 117. I missed the whole supermarket thing.
Good luck for you, Randolph said. That was a total cock and balls, if you'll pardon my franquise.
Coffee? No, thanks, sir. I'm subject to migraines, and coffee seems to make them worse.
Bad habit, anyway. Not as bad as cigarettes, but bad. Did you know I smoked until I was saved?
No, sir. I sure didn't.
Junior hoped this idiot would stop blathering and let him tell his story so he could get out of here. Yep, by Lester Coggins. Randolph splayed his hands on his chest. Full body immersion in the Prestel. Gave my heart to Jesus right then and there. I haven't been as faithful a churchgoer as some. Certainly not as faithful as your dad. But Reverend Coggins was a good man.
Randolph shook his head.
Dale Barbara's got a lot on his conscience. Always assuming he has one.
Yes, sir.
A lot to answer for, too. I gave him a shot of mace, and that was just a small down payment on what he's got coming. So, you were coming back from patrol, and...
And I got to thinking that someone told me they'd seen Angie's car in the garage. You know, the McCain garage.
Who told you that?
Frank? Junior rubbed his temple. I think maybe it was Frank.
Go on.
So anyway, I looked in one of the garage windows and her car was there. I went to the front door and rang the bell, but nobody answered. Then I went around to the back because I was worried. There was a smell.
Randolph nodded sympathetically. Basically, you just followed your nose. That was good police work, son.
Junior looked at Randolph sharply, wondering if this was a joke or a sly dig. But the chief's eyes seemed to hold nothing but honest admiration.
Junior realized that his father might have found an assistant. The first word actually to occur to him was accomplice. Who was even dumber than Andy Sanders.
He wouldn't have thought that possible.
Go on, finish up. I know this is painful to you. It's painful to all of us.
Yes, sir. Basically, it's just what you said. The back door was unlocked, and I followed my nose, straight to the pantry. I could hardly believe what I found there.
Did you see the dog tags then?
Yes. No, kind of. I saw Angie had something in her hand, on a chain, and I couldn't tell what it was, and I didn't want to touch anything.
Junior looked down modestly.
I know I'm just a rookie.
Good call, Randolph said. Smart call. You know, we'd have a whole forensic team from the state attorney general's office in there under ordinary circumstances. Really nail Barbara to the wall. But these aren't ordinary circumstances. Still, we've got enough, I'd say. He was a fool to overlook those dog tags.
I used my cell phone and called my father. Based on all the radio chatter, I figured you'd be busy down here.
Busy? Randolph rolled his eyes. Son, you don't know the half of it. You did the right thing calling your dad. He's practically a member of the department.
Dad grabbed two officers, Fred Denton and Jackie Weddington, and they came on over to the McCain's house. Linda Everett joined us while Freddie was photographing the crime scene. Then Stuart, Bowie, and his brother showed up with the funeral hack. My dad thought that was best, things being so busy at the hospital with the riot and all.
Randolph nodded. Just right. Help the living, store the dead. Who found the dog tags?
Jackie. She pushed Angie's hand open with a pencil, and they fell right out on the floor. Freddie took pictures of everything.
Helpful at a trial, Randolph said, which we'll have to handle ourselves if this dome thing doesn't clear up. But we can. You know what the Bible says. With faith, we can move mountains. What time did you find the body, son?
Around noon. After I took some time to say goodbye to my girlfriends.
And you called your father right away?
Not right away.
Junior gave Randolph a frank stare.
First, I had to go outside and vomit. They were beaten up so bad. I never saw anything like that in my life.
He let out a long sigh, being careful to put a small tremble in it. The tape recorder probably wouldn't pick up that tremble, but Randolph would remember it. When I was done heaving, that was when I called Dad.
Okay. I think that's all I need.
No more questions about the timeline or about his morning patrol. Not even a request for Junior to write up a report, which was good, since writing inevitably gave him a headache these days. Randolph leaned forward to snap off the tape recorder.
Thank you, Junior. Why don't you take the rest of the day off? Go home and rest. You look beat.
I'd like to be here when you question him, sir. Barbara.
Well, you don't have to worry about missing that today. We're going to give him 24 hours to stew in his own juices. Your dad's idea, and a good one. We'll question him tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow night, and you'll be there. I give you my word. We're going to question him vigorously.
Yes, sir, good.
None of this Miranda stuff.
No, sir.
And thanks to the dome, no turning him over to the county sheriff, either.
Randolph looked at Junior keenly. Son, this is going to be a true case of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Junior didn't know whether to say yes, sir, or no, sir, to that, because he had no idea what the idiot behind the desk was talking about.
Randolph held him with that keen glance a moment or two longer, as if to assure himself that they understood one another, then clapped his hands together once and stood up.
Go home, Junior. You've got to be shaken up a bit.
Yes, sir, I am. And I think I will rest, that is.
I had a pack of cigarettes in my pocket when Reverend Coggins dipped me,
Randolph said in a tone of fond-hearted reminiscence. He put an arm around Junior's shoulders as they walked to the door. Junior retained his respectful listening expression, but felt like screaming at the weight of that heavy arm. It was like wearing a meat necktie. They were ruined, of course, and I never bought another pack, save from the devil's weed by the Son of God. How's that for grace?
Awesome, Junior managed.
Brenda and Angie will get most of the attention, of course, and that's normal. Prominent town citizen and young girl, with her life ahead of her. But Reverend Coggins had his fans, too, not to mention a large and loving congregation.
Junior could see Randolph's blunt-fingered hand from the corner of his left eye. He wondered what Randolph would do if he suddenly cocked his head around and bit it. Bit one of those fingers right off, maybe, and spat it on the floor.
Don't forget Dodie.
He had no idea why he said it, but it worked. Randolph's hand dropped from his shoulder. The man looked thunderstruck. Junior realized he had forgotten Dodie.
Oh, God, Randolph said. Dodie.
Has anyone called Andy and told him?
I don't know, sir.
Your father will have, surely.
He's been awfully busy.
That was true. Big Jim was at home in his study, drafting his speech for the town meeting on Thursday night. The one that he'd give just before the townsfolk voted the selectmen emergency governing powers for the duration of the crisis.
I better call him, Randolph said.
But maybe I'd better pray on it first. Do you want to get knee-bound with me, son? Junior would have sooner poured lighter fluid down his pants and set his balls on fire, but didn't say so.
Speak to God on your own and you'll hear him answer more clearly. That's what my dad always says.
All right, son. That's good advice.
Before Randolph could say any more, Junior slipped first out of the office, then out of the police station. He walked home deep in thought, mourning his lost girlfriends and wondering if he could get another. Maybe more than one. Under the dome, all sorts of things might be possible. 15. P. Randolph did try to pray, but there was too much on his mind. Besides, the Lord helped those who help themselves. He didn't think that was in the Bible, but it was true just the same. He called Andy Sanders' cell from the list of numbers thumbtacked to the bulletin board on the wall. He hoped for no answer, but the guy picked up on the very first ring. Wasn't that always the way?
Hello, Andy. Chief Randolph, here. I've got some pretty tough news for you, my friend. Maybe you better sit down.
It was a difficult conversation. Hellacious, actually. When it was finally over, Randolph sat drumming his fingers on his desk. He thought again that if Duke Perkins were the one sitting behind this desk, he wouldn't be entirely sorry. Maybe not sorry at all. It had turned out to be a much harder and dirtier job than he had imagined. The private office wasn't worth the aggravation. Even the Green Chief's car wasn't. Every time he got behind the wheel and his butt slipped into the hollow Duke's Meteor hindquarters had made before him, the same thought occurred. You're not up to this. Sanders was coming down here. He wanted to confront Barbara. Randolph had tried to talk him out of it, but halfway through his suggestion that Andy's time would be better spent on his knees, praying for the souls of his wife and daughter, not to mention the strength to bear his cross, Andy had broken the connection. Randolph sighed and punched up another number. After two rings, Big Jim's ill-tempered voice was in his ear.
What? What?
It's me, Jim. I know you're working, and I hate to interrupt you, but could you come down here? I need help. 16. The three children stood in the somehow deathless afternoon light, under a sky that now had a decided yellowish tinge, and looked at the dead bear at the foot of the telephone pole. The pole was leaning crookedly. 4 feet up from its base, the creosoted wood was splintered and splashed with blood. Other stuff, too. White stuff that Joe supposed was fragments of bone, and grayish, mealy stuff that had to be brain. He turned around,
trying to control his gorge. He almost had it, too, but then Benny threw up a big wet yerp sound, and Nori followed suit. Joe gave in and joined the club.
When they were under control again, Joe unslung his backpack, took out the bottles of Snapple, and handed them around. He used the first mouthful to rinse with and spat it out. Nori and Benny did the same. Then they drank. The sweet tea was warm, but it still felt like heaven on Joe's raw throat. Nori took 2 cautious steps toward the black, fly-buzzing heap at the foot of the foam pole.
Like the deer, she said. Poor guy didn't have any riverbank to jump over, so he beat his brains out on a foam pole. Maybe it had rabies, Benny said in a thin voice. Maybe the deer did, too.
Joe guessed that was a technical possibility, but he didn't believe it.
I've been thinking about this suicide thing.
He hated the tremble he heard in his voice, but couldn't seem to do anything about it.
Whales and dolphins do it. They beach themselves. I've seen it on TV. And my dad says octopuses do it.
Pie, Nori said. Octopi.
Whatever. My dad said when their environment gets polluted, they eat off their own tentacles.
Dude, do you want me to throw up again? Benny asked.
He sounded querulous and tired.
Is that what's going on here? Nori asked. The environment's polluted?
Joe glanced up at the yellowish sky. Then he pointed southwest, where a hanging black residue from the fire started by the missile strike discolored the air. The smutch looked to be 200 or 300 feet high and a mile across. Maybe more.
Yes, she said, but that's different, isn't it?
Joe shrugged.
If we're going to feel a sudden urge to kill ourselves, maybe we should go back, Benny said. I got a lot to live for. I still haven't been able to beat Warhammer.
Try the Geiger counter on the bear, Nori said.
Joe held the sensor tube out toward the bear's carcass. The needle didn't drop, but it didn't rise either. Nori pointed east. Ahead of them, the road emerged from the thick band of black oak that gave the ridge its name. Once they were out of the trees, Joe thought they'd be able to see the apple orchard at the top.
Let's at least keep going until we're out of the trees, she said. We'll take a reading from there, and if it's still going up, we'll head back to town and tell Dr. Everett or that guy, Barbara, or both of them. Let them figure it out.
Benny looked doubtful.
I don't know.
If we feel anything weird, we'll turn back right away, Joe said.
If it might help, we should do it, Nori said. I want to get out of the mill before I go completely stir-crazy.
She smiled to show this was a joke, but it didn't sound like a joke, and Joe didn't take it as one. Lots of people kidded about what a small burg the mill was. It was probably why the James McMurtry song had been so popular. And it was, intellectually speaking, he supposed. Demographically, too. He could think of only one Asian American, Pamela Chen, who sometimes helped Lissa Jameson out at the library. And there were no black people at all, since the Laverty family had moved to Auburn. There was no McDonald's, let alone a Starbucks, and the movie theater was closed down. But until now, it had always felt geographically big to him, with plenty of room to roam. It was amazing how much it shrank in his mind once he realized that he and his mom and dad couldn't just pile into the family car and drive to Lewiston for fried clams and ice cream at Yoder's. Also, the town had plenty of resources, but they wouldn't last forever.
You're right, he said. It's important, worth the risk. At least I think so. You can stay here if you want to, Benny. This part of the mission is strictly volunteer.
No, I'm in, Benny said. If I let you guys go without me, you'd rank me to the dogs and back.
You're already there, Cho and Nori yelled in unison, then looked at each other and laughed. 17.
That's right. Cry.
The voice was coming from far away. Barbie struggled toward it, but it was hard to open his burning eyes.
You've got a lot to cry about.
The person making these declarations sounded like he was crying himself, and the voice was familiar. Barbie tried to see, but his lids felt swollen and heavy. The eyes beneath were pulsing with his heartbeat. His sinuses were so full, his ears crackled when he swallowed.
Why did you kill her? Why did you kill my baby?
Some son of a bitch maced me. Denton? No, Randolph. Barbie managed to open his eyes by placing the heels of his hands over his eyebrows and shoving upward. He saw Andy Sanders standing outside the cell with tears rolling down his cheeks. And what was Sanders seeing? A guy in a cell. And a guy in a cell always looked guilty. Sanders screamed,
She was all I had!
Randolph stood behind him, looking embarrassed and shuffling like a kid 20 minutes overdue for a bathroom pass. Even with his eyes burning and his sinuses pounding, Barbie wasn't surprised that Randolph had let Sanders come down here. Not because Sanders was the first selectman, but because Peter Randolph found it almost impossible to say no. Now, Andy, Randolph said, that's enough. You wanted to see him and I let you, even though it was against my better judgment. He's jugged good and proper, and he'll pay the price for what he did. So now, come on upstairs and I'll pour you a cup of... Andy grabbed the front of Randolph's uniform. He was 4 inches shorter, but Randolph still looked scared. Barbie didn't blame him. He was viewing the world through a deep red film. But he could see Andy Sanders' fury clearly enough.
Give me your gun. A trial's too good for him. He's apt to get off anyway. He's got friends in high places. Jim says so. I want some satisfaction. I deserve some satisfaction, so give me your gun.
Barbie didn't think Randolph's desire to please would go so far as handing over his weapon so that Andy could shoot him in this cell like a rat in a rain barrel. But he wasn't entirely sure. There might be a reason other than the craven need to please that had caused Randolph to bring Sanders down here, and to bring him down alone. He struggled to his feet. Mr. Sanders. Some of the mace had gotten into his mouth. His tongue and throat were swollen. His voice an unconvincing nasal croak.
I did not kill your daughter, sir. I did not kill anyone.
If you think about this, you'll see that your friend, Rennie, needs a scapegoat, and I'm the most convenient. But Andy was in no shape to think about anything. He dropped his hands to Randolph's holster and began clawing at the Glock there. Alarmed, Randolph struggled to keep it where it was. At that moment, a large-bellied figure descended the stairs, moving gracefully despite his bulk.
Andy, Big Jim boomed. Andy, pal, come here.
He opened his arms. Andy stopped struggling for the gun and rushed to him like a weeping child to the arms of his father. And Big Jim enfolded him.
I want a gun,
Andy babbled, lifting his tear-streaked, snot-creamy face to Big Jim's.
Get me a gun, Jim, now, right now. I want to shoot him for what he did. It's my right as a father. He killed my baby girl.
Maybe not just her, Big Jim said. Maybe not just Angie, Lester, and poor Brenda either. This halted the verbal flood. Andy stared up into Big Jim's slab of a face, dumbfounded, fascinated.
Maybe your wife, too. Duke, Myra Evans, all the others.
What?
Somebody's responsible for the dome, pal, am I right?
Yeah.
Andy was capable of no more, but Big Jim nodded benignly. And it seems to me that the people who did it had to have at least one inside man, someone to stir the pot, and who's better at pot stirring than a short-order cook? He put an arm around Andy's shoulder and led him to Chief Randolph. Big Jim glanced back at Barbie's red and swollen face, as if looking at some species of bug. We'll find proof, I have no doubt of it. He's already demonstrated he's not smart enough to cover his tracks. Barbie fixed his attention on Randolph.
This is a setup, he said in his nasal foghorning voice. It might have started just because Rennie needed to cover his ass, but now it's just a naked power grab.
You may not be expendable yet, Chief, but when you are, you'll go too.
Shut up, Randolph said.
Rennie was stroking Andy's hair. Barbie thought of his mother, and how she used to stroke their cocker spaniel Missy, when Missy got old and stupid and incontinent.
He'll pay the price, Andy. You have my word on that.
But first we're going to get all the details, the what, the when, the why, and who else was involved, because he's not in it alone. You can bet your Rudy Toot on that. He's got accomplices. He'll pay the price. But first, we're going to wring him dry of information.
What price? Andy asked.
He was looking up at Big Jim almost rapturously now.
What price will he pay?
Well, if he knows how to lift the dome, and I wouldn't put it past him, I guess we'll have to be satisfied with seeing him in Shawshank. Life without parole.
Not good enough, Andy whispered.
Rennie was still stroking Andy's head. If the dome doesn't let go, he smiled, in that case, we'll have to try him ourselves, and when we find him guilty, we'll execute him. Do you like that better?
Much,
Andy whispered. So do I, pal. Stroking. Stroking. So do I. 18. They came out of the woods, three abreast, and stopped, looking up at the orchard.
There's something up there, Benny said. I see it.
His voice sounded excited, but to Joe it also sounded strangely far away.
So do I, Nori said. It looks like a...
Radio beacon were the words she wanted to say, but she never got them out. She managed only a rrrr sound like a toddler playing trucks in a sandpile. Then she fell off her bike and lay on the road with her arms and legs jerking.
Nori?
Joe looked down at her, more with bemusement than alarm, then up at Benny. Their eyes met for just a moment, and then Benny also toppled, pulling his bike over on top of him. He began to thrash, kicking the high planes off to one side. The Geiger counter flew into the ditch, dial side down. Joe tottered toward it and reached out an arm that seemed to stretch like rubber. He turned the yellow box over. The needle had jumped to +200 just below the red danger zone. He saw this, then fell into a black hole full of orange flames. He thought they were coming from a huge heap of pumpkins, a funeral pyre of blazing jack-o'-lanterns. Somewhere voices were calling, lost and terrified. Then the darkness swallowed him. 19. When Julia came into the Democrat office after leaving the supermarket, Tony Gay, the former sports reporter who was now the entire news department, was typing on his laptop. She handed him the camera and said,
"Stop what you're doing and print these."
She sat down at her computer to write her story. She'd been holding the open in her head all the way up Main Street. Ernie Calvert, the former manager of Food City, called for people to come in the back. He said he had opened the doors for them, but by then it was too late. The riot was on. It was a good lead. The problem was she couldn't write it. She kept hitting all the wrong keys.
"Go upstairs and lie down," Tony said.
"No, I have to write."
"You're not going to write anything like you are. You're shaking like a leaf. It's shock. Lie down for an hour. I'll print the pictures and send them to your computer desktop. Transcribe your notes, too. Go on up."
She didn't like what he was saying, but recognized the wisdom of it. Only it turned out to be more than an hour. She hadn't slept well since Friday night, which seemed a century ago, and she had no more than put her head on the pillow before she fell into a deep sleep. When she woke up, she saw with panic that the shadows in her bedroom had grown long. It was late afternoon. And Horace? He would have wet in some corner and would give her his most shamefaced look as though it were his fault instead of hers. She slipped on her sneakers, hurried into the kitchen, and found her corgi not by the door whining to go out, but peacefully asleep on his blanket bed between the stove and the refrigerator. There was a note on the kitchen table, propped up against the salt and pepper shakers. 3 p.m. Julia. Pete F. and I collaborated on the supermarket story. It ain't great, but will be when you put your stamp on it.
The pics you got aren't bad either. Romy Burpee came by and says he still has plenty of papers, so we're okay on that score. Also, says you need to write an editorial about what happened. Totally unnecessary, he said, and totally incompetent, unless they wanted it to happen. I wouldn't put it past that guy, and I don't mean Randolph. Pete and I agree that there should be an editorial, but we need to watch our step until all the facts are known. We also agreed that you needed some sleep in order to write it the way it needs to be written. Those were suitcases under your eyes, boss. I'm going home to spend some time with my wife and kids. Pete's gone to the PD. Says something big has happened, and he wants to find out what. Tony G. P.S. I walked Horace. He did all his business. Julia, not wanting Horace to forget she was part of his life, woke him up long enough for him to gobble half a begging strip, then went downstairs to punch up the news story and write the editorial Tony and Pete were suggesting. Just as she was starting, her cell rang.
Shumway, Democrat.
Julia, it was Pete Freeman. I think you better get down here. Marty Arsenault's on the desk, and he won't let me in. Told me to wait out goddamn side. He's no cop, just a dumb pulp jockey who picks up a little side money directing traffic in the summertime. But now he's acting like Chief Big Dick of Horny Mountain.
Pete, I've got a ton of stuff to do here, so unless...
Brenda Perkins is dead, so are Angie McCain, Dodie Sanders.
What?
She stood up so suddenly her chair tipped over. And Lester Coggins, they were killed, and get this, Dale Barbara's been arrested for the murders. He's in jail downstairs.
I'll be right there.
Ah, fuck, Pete said. Here comes Andy Sanders, and he's crying his goddamn eyes out. Should I try for a comment, or...
Not if the man lost his daughter 3 days after losing his wife. We're not the New York Post. I'll be right there.
She broke the connection without waiting for a reply. Initially, she felt calm enough she even remembered to lock up the office. But once she was on the sidewalk, in the heat and under that tobacco-stained sky, her calm broke, and she began to run. 20. Joe, Nori, and Benny lay twitching on the Black Ridge Road in sunlight that was too diffuse. Heat that was too hot blared down on them. A crow, not in the least suicidal, landed on a telephone wire and gazed at them with bright, intelligent eyes. It cawed once, then flapped away through the strange afternoon air.
Halloween,
Joe muttered.
Make them stop screaming,
Benny groaned.
No, son,
Nori said. Her hands groped to the air. She was crying.
No sun, oh my God, there's no more sun.
At the top of Black Ridge, in the apple orchard that overlooked all of Chester's Mill, a brilliant mauve light flashed. Every 15 seconds, it flashed again. 21. Julia hurried up the police station steps, her face still puffy from sleep, her hair standing up and back. When Pete made to fall in beside her, she shook her head.
Better stay here, I may call you in when I get the interview.
Love the positive thinking, but don't hold your breath, Pete said. Not long after Andy showed up, guess who? He pointed at the Hummer parked in front of a fire hydrant. Linda Everett and Jackie Weddington were standing near it, deep in conversation. Both women looked seriously freaked out. Inside the station, Julia was first struck by how warm it was. The air conditioning had been turned off, presumably to save juice. Next, by the number of young men who were sitting around, including two of the God-knew-how-many Killian brothers. There was no mistaking those long beaks and bullet heads. The young men all seemed to be filling out forms.
What if you didn't have no last place of employment?
One asked another. There was tearful shouting from downstairs. Andy Sanders. Julia headed toward the ready room where she had been a frequent visitor over the years, even a contributor to the Coffee and Donuts Fund. A wicker basket. She had never been stopped before, but this time, Marty Arsenault said,
You can't go back there, Ms. Shumway. Orders.
He spoke in an apologetic, conciliatory voice he probably had not used with Pete Freeman. Just then, Big Jim Rennie and Andy Sanders came up the stairs from what Mill PD officers called the chicken coop. Andy was crying. Big Jim had an arm around him and was speaking soothingly. Peter Randolph came behind them. Randolph's uniform was resplendent, but the face above it was that of a man who has barely escaped a bomb blast.
Jim, Pete, Julia called. I want to talk to you for the Democrat.
Big Jim turned around long enough to give her a glance that said people in hell wanted ice water, too. Then he began leading Andy toward the chief's office. Rennie was talking about praying. Julia tried to bolt past the desk. Still looking apologetic, Marty grabbed her arm. She said, "When you asked me to keep that little altercation with your wife last year out of the paper, Marty, I did. Because you would have lost your job otherwise. So if you've got an ounce of gratitude in you, let me go." Marty let her go. "I tried to stop you, but you wouldn't listen," he muttered. "Remember that." Julia trotted across the ready room.
"Just a damn minute," she said to Big Jim. "You and Chief Randolph are town officials, and you're going to talk to me."
This time, the look Big Jim gave her was angry, as well as contemptuous.
"No, we're not. You have no business back here."
"But he does?" she asked, and nodded to Andy Sanders. "If what I'm hearing about Dodie is right, he's the last person who should have been allowed downstairs."
"That son of a bitch killed my precious girl," Andy bawled.
Big Jim jabbed a finger at Julia.
"You'll get the story when we're ready to give it out, not before."
"I want to see Barbara."
"He's under arrest for 4 murders. Are you insane?"
"If the father of one of his supposed victims can get downstairs to see him, why not me?"
"Because you're neither a victim nor a next of kin," Big Jim said. His upper lip rose, exposing his teeth.
"Does he have a lawyer?"
"I'm done talking to you, woman."
"He doesn't need a lawyer. He needs to be hung. He killed my precious girl."
"Come on, pal," Big Jim said. "We'll take it to the Lord in prayer."
"What kind of evidence do you have? Has he confessed? If he hasn't, what kind of alibi has he offered? How does it match up with the times of death? Do you even know the times of death? If the bodies were just discovered, how can you? Were they shot or stabbed or..."
"Pete, get rid of this rhymes with witch," Big Jim said without turning around. "If she won't go on her own, throw her out, and tell whoever's on the desk that he's fired."
Marty Arsenal winced and passed a hand over his eyes. Big Jim escorted Andy into the chief's office and closed the door.
"Is he charged?" Julia asked Randolph. "You can't charge him without a lawyer, you know. It isn't legal."
And although he still didn't look dangerous, only stunned, Pete Randolph said something that chilled her heart. "Until the dome goes away, Julia, I guess legal is whatever we decide it is."
"When were they killed? Tell me that much anyhow."
"Well, it looks like the 2 girls were fur—" The office door opened, and she had no doubt at all that Big Jim had been standing on the other side, listening. Andy was sitting behind what was now Randolph's desk with his face in his hands.
"Get her out," Big Jim snarled. "I don't want to have to tell you again."
"You can't hold him incommunicado, and you can't deny information to the people of this town," Julia shouted.
"You're wrong on both counts," Big Jim said. "Have you ever heard that saying, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem? Well, you're not solving anything by being here. You're a tiresome, nosy Parker. You always were, and if you don't leave, you're going to be arrested. Fair warning."
"Fine, arrest me. Stick me in a cell downstairs."
She held out her hands with the wrists together as if for handcuffs. For one moment, she thought Jim Rennie was going to hit her. The desire to do so was clear on his face. Instead, he spoke to Pete Randolph.
"For the last time, get this nosy Parker out of here. If she resists, throw her out."
And he slammed the door. Not meeting her eyes, and with his cheeks the color of freshly fired brick, Randolph took her arm. This time, Julia went. As she passed the duty desk, Marty Arsenault said, more in disconsolation than anger, "Now, look, I lost my job to one of these thuds who don't know their asses from their elbows."
"You won't lose your job, Martz," Randolph said. "I can talk him around."
A moment later, she was outside, blinking in the sunlight.
"So," Pete Freeman said, "how'd that go?"
22. Benny was the first to come out of it. And aside from being hot, his shirt was stuck to his less-than-heroic chest. He felt okay. He crawled to Nori and shook her. She opened her eyes and looked at him dazed. Her hair was clumped to her sweaty cheeks.
"What happened?" she asked. "I must have fallen asleep. I had a dream, only I can't remember what it was. It was bad, though. I know that."
Joe McClatchy rolled over and pushed himself to his knees.
"Jojo?" Benny asked.
He hadn't called his friend Jojo since fourth grade.
You okay?
Yeah, the pumpkins were on fire.
What pumpkins?
Joe shook his head. He couldn't remember. All he knew was that he wanted to grab some shade and drink the rest of his Snapple. Then he thought of the Geiger counter. He fished it out of the ditch and saw with relief that it was still working. They'd built these things tough in the 20th century, it seemed. He showed Benny the plus 200 reading and tried to show Nori, but she was looking up the slope of Black Ridge to the orchard at the top.
What's that?
She asked and pointed. Joe initially saw nothing. Then, a bright purple light flashed out. It was almost too bright to look at. Shortly thereafter, it flashed again. He looked down at his watch, wanting to time the flashes, but his watch had stopped at 4:02.
I think that's what we're looking for, he said, getting to his feet.
He expected his legs to feel rubbery, but they didn't. Except for being too hot, he felt pretty much okay.
Now, let's get the hell out of here before it makes us sterile or something.
Dude, Benny said, who wants kids? They might turn out like me.
Nevertheless, he mounted his bike.
They rode back the way they came, not stopping to rest and drink until they were over the bridge and back to Route 119.
Salt. 1.
The female officers standing by Big Jim's H3 were still talking, Jackie now nervously puffing a cigarette, but they broke off as Julia Shumway stalked past them.
Julia, Linda asked hesitantly, what did... Julia kept on.
The last thing she wanted while she was still boiling was to talk to any more representatives of law and order as it now seemed to exist in Chester's Mill. She walked halfway to the Democrat's office before she realized that anger wasn't all she was feeling. It wasn't even most of what she was feeling. She stopped under the awning of Mill New and Used Books, closed until further notice, read the hand-lettered sign in the window. Partly to wait for her racing heart to slow, mostly to look inside herself. It didn't take long.
Mostly. I'm just scared, she said, and jumped a little at the sound of her own voice. She hadn't meant to speak aloud. Pete Freeman caught up with her.
Are you all right?
Fine.
It was a lie, but it emerged stoutly enough. Of course she couldn't tell what her face was saying. She reached up and tried to flatten the sleep stack of hair at the back of her head. It went down, then sprang up again. Bedhead on top of everything else, she thought. Very nice, the finishing touch.
I thought Rennie was actually going to have our new chief arrest you, Pete said.
He was big-eyed, and at that moment looked much younger than his 30-something years.
I was hoping... Julia framed an invisible headline with her hands. Democrat reporter scores exclusive jailhouse interview with accused murderer.
Julia, what's going on here? Aside from the dome, that is, did you see all those guys filling out forms? It was kind of scary.
I saw it, Julia said, and I intend to write about it. I intend to write about all this. And at town meeting on Thursday night, I don't think I'll be the only one with serious questions for James Rennie.
She laid a hand on Pete's arm.
I'm going to see what I can find out about these murders, then I'll write what I have, plus an editorial as strong as I can make it without rabble-rousing.
She uttered a humorless bark of laughter.
When it comes to rousing rabble, Jim Rennie's got the home court advantage.
I don't understand what you...
That's okay, just get busy. I need a couple of minutes to get hold of myself, then maybe I can figure out who to talk to first. Because there isn't a hell of a lot of time. If we're going to go to press tonight...
Photocopier, he said.
Huh?
Go to photocopier tonight.
She gave him a shaky smile and shooed him on his way. At the door to the newspaper office, he looked back. She tossed him a wave to show she was okay, then peered through the dusty window of the bookstore. The downtown movie theater had been shut for half a decade, and the drive-in outside of town was long gone. Rennie's auxiliary car lot stood where its big screen had once towered over 119. But somehow, Ray Toll had kept this dirty little emporium galorium crutching along. Part of the window display consisted of self-help books. The rest of the window was heaped with paperbacks featuring fog-bound mansions, ladies in distress, and bare-chested hunks both afoot and on horseback. Several of said hunks were waving swords and appeared to be dressed in just their underpants. Get the hots for dark plots, the sign on this side read. Dark plots indeed.
If the dome wasn't bad enough, weird enough, there's the selectmen from hell. What worried her the most, she realized, what scared her the most, was how fast this was happening. Rennie had gotten used to being the biggest, meanest rooster in the farmyard, and she would have expected him to try to strengthen his hold on the town eventually, say after a week or a month, cut off from the outside world. But this was only 3 days and change. Suppose Cox and his scientists cracked through the dome tonight. Suppose it even disappeared on its own. Big Jim would immediately shrink back to his former size. Only he'd have egg on his face, too. What egg? She asked herself, still looking into the dark plots. He'd just say he was doing the best he could under trying circumstances, and they'd believe him. That was probably true. But it still didn't explain why the man hadn't waited to make his move. Because something went wrong, and he had to. Also, I don't think he's completely sane, she told the heaped-up paperbacks. I don't think he ever was. Even if true, how did you explain people who still had fully stocked pantries rioting at the local supermarket? It made no sense unless he instigated it. That was ridiculous. The blue plate special at the paranoid cafe, wasn't it? She supposed she could ask some of the people who'd been at Food City what they'd seen, but weren't the murders more important? She was the only real reporter she had, after all, and...
Julia, Miss Shumway.
Julia was so deep in thought she almost lifted out of her loafers. She wheeled around and might have fallen if Jackie Weddington hadn't steadied her. Linda Everett was with her, and it was she who had spoken. They both looked scared.
Can we talk to you? Jackie asked.
Of course. Listening to people talk is what I do. The downside is that I write what they say. You ladies know that, don't you?
But you can't use our names, Linda said. If you don't agree to that, forget the whole thing.
As far as I'm concerned, Julia said, smiling, you two are just a source close to the investigation. Does that work?
If you promise to answer our questions too, Jackie said, will you?
All right.
You were at the supermarket, weren't you?
Linda asked.
Curiouser and curiouser.
Yes, so were you two, so let's talk, compare notes.
Not here, Linda said. Not on the street, it's too public. And not at the newspaper office, either.
Take it easy, Lynn, Jackie said, putting a hand on her shoulder.
You take it easy, Linda said. You're not the one with the husband who thinks you just helped railroad an innocent man.
I don't have a husband,
Jackie said, quite reasonably, Julia thought, and lucky for her. Husbands were so often a complicating factor.
But I do know a place we can go. It's private and always unlocked. She considered. At least it was. Since the dome, I don't know.
Julia, who had just been considering whom to interview first, had no intention of letting these two slip away.
Come on, she said. We'll walk on opposite sides of the street until we're past the police station, shall we?
At this, Linda managed a smile.
What a good idea, she said.
2. Piper Libby lowered herself carefully in front of the altar of the First Congo Church, wincing, even though she had put down a pew pad for her bruised and swollen knees. She braced herself with her right hand, holding her recently dislocated left arm against her side. It seemed okay. Less painful than her knees, in fact. But she had no intention of testing it unnecessarily. It would be all too easy to get it out of joint again. She had been informed of that, sternly, after her soccer injury in high school. She folded her hands and closed her eyes. Immediately, her tongue went to the hole where there had been a tooth up until yesterday. But there was a worse hole in her life.
Hello, not there, she said. It's me again, back for another helping of your love and mercy.
A tear trickled from beneath one swollen eyelid and ran down one swollen, not to mention colorful, cheek.
Is my dog anywhere around? I only ask because I miss him so much. If he is, I hope you'll give him the spiritual equivalent of a chew bone. He deserves one.
More tears now. Slow and hot and stinging.
Probably he's not. Most major religions agree that dogs don't go to heaven, although certain offshoot sects, and the Reader's Digest, I believe, disagree.
Of course, if there was no heaven, the question was moot. And the idea of this heavenless existence, this heavenless cosmology, was where what remained of her faith seemed more and more at home.
Maybe oblivion. Maybe something worse. A vast, trackless plain under a white sky, say. A place where none was always the hour, nowhere the destination, and nobody your companions. Just a big old not there, in other words. For bad cops, lady preachers, kids who accidentally shot themselves, and galoot German shepherds who died trying to protect their mistresses. No being to sort the wheat from the chaff. There was something histrionic about praying to such a concept, if not downright blasphemous. But occasionally it helped.
But heaven's not the point, she resumed. The point right now is trying to figure out how much of what happened to Clover was my fault. I know I have to own some of it. My temper got the best of me. Again, my religious teaching suggests you put that short fuse in me to begin with, and it's my job to deal with it, but I hate that idea. I don't completely reject it, but I hate it. It makes me think of how when you take your car to get repaired, the guys in the shop always find a way to blame the problem on you. You ran it too much. You didn't run it enough. You forgot to release the handbrake. You forgot to close your windows, and the rain got in the wiring. And you know what's worse? If you're not there, I can't shove even a little of the blame off on you. What does that leave? Fucking genetics?
She sighed.
Sorry about the profanity. Why don't you just pretend it wasn't there? That's what my mother always used to do. In the meantime, I have another question. What do I do now? This town is in terrible trouble, and I'd like to do something to help, only I can't decide what. I feel foolish and weak and confused. I suppose if I was one of those Old Testament Eremites, I'd say I need a sign. At this point, even yield or reduce speed in school zone would look good.
The moment she finished saying this, the outside door opened, then boomed shut. Piper looked over her shoulder, half expecting to see an angel complete with wings and blazing white robe. If he wants to wrestle, he'll have to heal my arm first, she thought. It wasn't an angel. It was Romy Burpee. Half his shirt was untucked, hanging down his leg almost to mid-thigh, and he looked almost as downcast as she felt. He started down the center aisle, then saw her and stopped, as surprised to see Piper as she was him.
Oh, she, he said, only with his Lewiston on Parle accent. I'm sorry, I didn't know you was there. I'll come back later.
No, she said, and struggled to her feet once more, using just her right arm. I'm done, anyway.
I'm actually a Catholic, he said.
No shit, Piper thought.
But there isn't a Catholic church in the mill, which of course you know, being a minister, and you know what they say about any port in a storm. I thought I'd come in and say a little prayer for Brenda. I always liked that woman.
He rubbed a hand up one cheek. The rasp of his palm on the beard stubble there seemed very loud in the hollow silence of the church. His Elvis dew was drooping around his ears.
Loved her, really. I never said, but I think she knew.
Piper stared at him with growing horror. She hadn't been out of the parsonage all day, and although she knew about what had happened at Food City, several of her parishioners had called her, she had heard nothing about Brenda Perkins.
Brenda? What happened to her?
Murdered. Others, too. They saying that guy Bobby did it. He's been arrested.
Piper clapped a hand over her mouth and swayed on her feet. Romy hurried forward and put a steadying arm around her waist. And that was how they were standing before the altar, almost like a man and woman about to be married, when the vestibule door opened again and Jackie led Linda and Julia inside.
Maybe this isn't such a good place after all, Jackie said.
The church was a soundbox, and although she didn't speak loudly, Piper and Romeo Burpee heard her perfectly.
Don't leave, Piper said. Not if it's about what happened. I can't believe Mr. Barbara. I would have said he was incapable. He put my arm back in after it was dislocated. He was very gentle about it.
She paused to think about that.
As gentle as he could be, under the circumstances. Come down front, please, come down front. People can fix a dislocated arm and still be capable of murder, Linda said,
but she was biting her lip and twisting her wedding ring. Jackie put a hand on her wrist.
We were going to keep this quiet, Lynn, remember?
Too late for that, Linda said. They've seen us with Julia. If she writes a story, and those two say they saw us with her, we'll get blamed.
Piper had no clear idea what Linda was talking about, but she got the general gist. She raised her right arm and swept it around.
You're in my church, Mrs. Everett, and what's said here stays here.
Do you promise? Linda asked.
Yes. So why don't we talk about it? I was just praying for a sign. And here you all are.
I don't believe in stuff like that, Jackie said.
Neither do I, actually, Piper said, and laughed.
I don't like it, Jackie said.
It was Julia she was addressing.
No matter what she says, this is too many people. Losing my job like Marty is one thing. I could deal with that. The pay sucks anyway. Getting Jim Rennie mad at me, though. She shook her head. Not a good idea.
It isn't too many, Piper said. It's just the right number. Mr. Burpee, can you keep a secret?
Romy Burpee, who had done any number of questionable deals in his time, nodded and put a finger over his lips.
Mum's the word, he said.
Let's go in the parsonage, Piper said.
When she saw that Jackie still looked doubtful, Piper held out her left hand to her, very carefully.
Come, let us reason together, maybe over a little tot of whiskey.
And with this, Jackie was at last convinced. 3.
31 Burn Cleanse, Burn Cleanse. The beast will be cast into a burning lake of fire. Revelations 19:20. To be tormented day and night forever. 2010. Burn the wicked. Purify the saintly. Burn, cleanse, burn, cleanse. 31. 31 Jesus of fire coming. 31.
The three men crammed into the cab of the rumbling public works truck looked at this cryptic message with some wonder. It had been painted on the storage building behind the WCIK studios, black on red, and in letters so large they covered almost the entire surface. The man in the middle was Roger Killian, the chicken farmer with the bullet-headed brood. He turned to Stuart Bowie, who was behind the wheel of the truck.
What's it mean, Stewie?
It was Fern Bowie who answered.
It means that goddamn Phil Bush is crazier than ever. That's what it means.
He opened the truck's glove compartment, removed a pair of greasy work gloves, and revealed a .38 revolver. He checked the loads, then snapped the cylinder back into place with a flick of his wrist and jammed the pistol into his belt.
In all funny, Stewart said, that is a goddamn good way to blow your baby makers off. Don't you worry about me, worry about him, Fern said, pointing back at the studio.
From it, the faint sound of gospel music drifted to them.
He's been getting high on his own supply for most of a year now, and he's about as reliable as nitroglycerin. Phil likes people to call him the chef now, Roger Killian said.
They had first pulled up outside the studio, and Stuart had honked the PW truck's big horn, not once, but several times. Phil Bushy had not come out. He might be in there, hiding. He might be wandering in the woods behind the station. It was even possible, Stuart thought, that he was in the lab. Paranoid, dangerous, which still didn't make the gun a good idea. He leaned over, plucked it from Fern's belt, and tucked it under the driver's seat.
Hey, Fern cried. You're not firing a gun in there, Stuart said. You're apt to blow us all to the moon.
And to Roger, he said, when's the last time you saw that scrawny motherfucker? Roger mulled it over.
Been 4 weeks, at least, since the last big shipment out of town, when we had that big Chinook helicopter come in.
Stuart considered. Not good. If Bushy was in the woods, that was all right. If he was cowering in the studio, paranoid and thinking they were feds, probably still no problem. Unless he decided to come out shooting, that was. If he was in the storage building, though, that might be a problem.
Stuart said to his brother, there's some good-sized chunks of wood in the back of the truck. Get you one of those. If Phil shows and starts cutting up rough, clock him one. What if he has a gun?
Roger asked quite reasonably.
He won't, Stuart said.
And although he wasn't actually sure of this, he had his orders. 2 tanks of propane to be delivered to the hospital post-haste.
and we're going to move the rest of it out of there as soon as we can, Big Jim had said. We're officially out of the meth business. That was something of a relief. When they were shut of this dumb thing, Stewart intended to get out of the funeral business, too. Move someplace warm, like Jamaica or Barbados. He never wanted to see another dead body. But he didn't want to be the one who told Chef Bushy they were closing down. Annie had informed Big Jim of that.
Let me worry about the sheriff, Big Jim had said.
Stewart drove the big orange truck around the building and backed it up to the rear doors. He left the engine idling to run the winch and the hoist.
Look at that, Roger Killian marveled.
He was staring into the west where the sun was going down in a troubling red smear. Soon, it would sink below the great black smudge left by the woods fire and be blotted out in a dirty eclipse.
Don't that just beat the dickens?
Quit gawking, Stewart said. I want to do this and get gone. Fernie, get you a junk. Pick out a good one.
Fern climbed over the hoist and picked out a leftover piece of planking about as long as a baseball bat. He held it in both hands and gave it an experimental swish.
This'll do, he said.
Baskin Robbins, Roger said dreamily.
He was still shading his eyes and squinting west. The squint was not a good look for him. It made him resemble a fairy tale troll. Stewart paused while unlocking the back door, a complicated process that involved a touchpad and two locks.
What are you pissing about?
31 flavors, Roger said.
He smiled, revealing a rotting set of teeth that had never been visited by Joe Boxer or probably any dentist. Stewart had no idea what Roger was talking about, but his brother did.
I don't think that's an ice cream ad on the side of the building, Fern said, unless there's Baskin Robbins in the Book of Revelations. Shut up, both of you, Stewart said. Fernie, stand ready with that junk.
He pushed the door open and peered in.
Phil, call him Sheriff, Roger advised, like that nigger cook on South Park. That's what he likes.
Sheriff, Stewart called. You in there? Sheriff?
No answer. Stewart fumbled into the gloom, half expecting his hand to be seized at any moment, and found the light switch. He turned it on, revealing a room that stretched about 3/4 the length of the storage building. The walls were unfinished bare wood, the spaces between the laths stuffed with pink foam insulation. The room was almost filled with LP gas tanks and canisters of all sizes and brands. He had no idea how many there were in all, but if forced to guess, he would have said between 400 and 600. Stewart walked slowly up the center aisle, peering at the stenciling on the tanks. Big Jim had told him exactly which ones to take, had said they'd be near the back, and by God, they were. He stopped at the 5 municipal-sized tanks with CRHOSP on the side. They were between tanks that had been filched from the post office, and some with Mill Middle School on the sides.
We're supposed to take 2, he said to Roger. Bring the chain and we'll hook 'em up. Fernie, go you down there and try that door to the lab. If it ain't locked, lock it.
He tossed Fern his key ring. Fern could have done without this chore, but he was an obedient brother. He walked down the aisle between the piles of propane tanks. They ended 10 feet from the door, and the door, he saw with a sinking heart, was standing ajar. Behind him, he heard the clank of the chain, then the whine of the winch and the low clatter of the first tank being dragged back to the truck. It sounded far away, especially when he imagined the chef crouching on the other side of that door, red-eyed and crazy, all smoked up and toting a Tech 9.
Chef, he asked, you here, buddy?
No answer. And although he had no business doing so, was probably crazy himself for doing so, curiosity got the better of him, and he used his makeshift club to push open the door. The fluorescents in the lab were on, but otherwise this part of the Christ is King storage building looked empty. The 20 or so cookers, big electric grills, each hooked to its own exhaust fan and propane canister, were off. The pots, beakers, and expensive flasks were all on their shelves. The place stank. Always had, always would, Fern thought. But the floor was swept, and there was no sign of disarray. On one wall was a Rennie's used car's calendar, still turned to August. Probably when the motherfucker finished losing touch with reality, Fern thought. Just flow.